Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it. Hello and welcome, Patrick, to Urbanistica podcast.
Thank you, Mustafa. Very nice to be here.
How are you?
I'm good. Had a good travel to your office, to the place here.
Yeah.
And we know each other, of course, from KTH. So it's nice to see each other.
Yeah. I'm very happy that you're here. And tell me, how was the trip to the office? Is it still like difficult? A lot of construction work. No?
Yeah, exactly. I don't come to Solna that often, so I biked to the city, to Slussen, and that's of course already a challenge to get there, go around.
Yeah.
And then the bus, which I don't take that often. I always cycle everywhere.
Yeah.
But that was very fast, actually. Mm-hmm. It's faster than I thought.
Yeah. How do you like Stockholm when it comes to cycling? Are you happy with the...
Well, I'm actually quite happy with the way it's developing. I live in Nacka in Sikla, so just on the border of Stockholm, and it's the office is on Södermalm, so it's like 15-20 minutes to cycle.
Yeah,
which is perfect. And of course, they're working more on the cycle ways. Also, in Nacka, it's developing more at least, so it's good. And in winter, I also cycle. I keep on cycling. Amazing. So then, almost no one's there. So then I have a lot of space.
Yeah, right? It's yours. But is it like convenient to bike in the winter, or there is snow and so?
Well, people think it's difficult, but actually it is.
I think it's difficult.
Yeah, but it's snowing, of course, every now and then. But they are taking away the snow, and it's maybe 1 or 2 days per year that you really cannot bike.
Okay.
Then it's mayhem, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen that often, actually. And as I said, when you cycle, there's almost no one there, so you have a lot of space.
Yeah.
But of course, you need to be careful. I don't have the spikes on my deck on the wheels, but I have very wide the tires.
The tires, yeah, yeah.
So it works.
Cool.
A Dutch bike.
Of course. So you live in Siklas, like there will be the wood city, no?
Yes, yeah? Exactly.
Are you excited?
Yeah, no, I think it's Atrium Jungberg is they're really pushing for a combination of housing and commercial and culture.
Yeah.
So it has already been a very good development, I think, for the city. Now, of course, the subway is coming there as well, so to densify is fantastic, and to densify with wood and that kind of development, that's great. What we do need, though, is more public space and parks.
Yeah.
So that they need to take care of as well.
Mm.
But you see, I see in the Dutch newspapers and international, they're talking about the wood city in Sikla already. So
it's really
good. Of course, it's also very good branding.
Yeah, great. So, Patrick, I think it was 2016.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, when I started studying my master in KTH.
Yeah.
And we had the first studio, and it was with you. You were our supervisor. And I remember still until today, we did the first presentation, and the first question we got from you, what is your story? And from there, we start to learn, how do we pitch our solution or our plan? And we need to make a story and make it clear instead of just make drawings and so on. So until now, we talk about you behind the scenes.
Very good.
I think it's good, with other classmates on LinkedIn. And we say, sometimes we make jokes. So what is your story? when they show us something, or when I show them a proposal or something, and they'll be like, it's like, also for joke, we remember you, but also like it's a real question, like what is the DNA or the concept?
Exactly.
So I'm very happy that you're here. I'm going to talk about storytelling in relation to urban design. So for you, how do you define storytelling in relation to urban design? What is it about?
Well, it's a good and a big question, of course, but it's exactly as you said, also in KTH at the Masters of Urban
Planning and Design.
Planning and Design, Sustainable Planning and Design. It was very important to see what is the uniqueness of the project that I'm working on. What is the unique, it's not the selling point, but it's the unique aspect of that project and how can we lift it? And it can be about the existing DNA that you lift in a certain way and you add other program or layers to it, but it can also be something that you find, which is, for example, that specific program that you develop in such a different way that it lands in that place on a very specific way. And that's the sort of uniqueness of the project that always needs to be in the forefront of your narrative, of your storytelling.
Yeah. But like how do we find the uniqueness? We are maybe a lot of times we are not living there. We don't have like really a relation with the place.
No.
So how do we explore it and find the uniqueness?
Well, of course, we have a way in the office to work with urban design, which is kind of, you know, you do your analysis, then you do maybe different scenarios which lends in a concept, which then becomes the design, and you explain that through visuals, through plans, through etc. So that we also explain at KTH, for example, on how you have a structure to do that. But the main thing that you always need to be working on is curiosity. So are you curious? What is happening in this place? Is there something that is so special or so unexpected that I can lift? That's the curiosity that would make the project just stand out or can also lift to the next level. You know, we also need to think about, of course, if you think, well, we'll talk a bit more about sustainability, but what is that then? How can we push the different elements of that? And that has to do with landscape, with performative systems, with energy, etc. The other one is we always often experiment in our projects, so we try to find different ways to approach it. So if you just go into one line and you say, okay, I have 1,000 dwellings that I need to put into this place, I do it in blocks, I have streets, I have a central park, and I add some water and that's it. But there can be, maybe you want to have one tower and you want to have this fantastic water park instead, which is amazing, big, it also has recreation, etc. That's then a totally different line that you're looking for. So this experiment and testing in scenarios and really testing different options and directions, that will give you more insight into what the possibilities of the site are and will help you with that narrative. Yeah. So in the end, maybe it's still a combination of those different experimental tests that you did. But if you don't go there, then you, of course, don't know. If you just go into the straight line, which is connected to something that you know from another project or you know from a reference project or you've learned about, then you will never find really your own way. So that's kind of then within the narrative that you're explaining. Where if you find that, you know, the uniqueness of the project, then you, of course, also need to visualize that. What we often see is that it's a lot of words and it's a lot of you know, explaining. It's a sustainable mixed living area, but we need to explain much more clearly, well, what is it then? And also show in graphics, in visuals, in plans, in structures. Okay, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
So that's also part of the storytelling and the narrative, which is extremely important.
Exactly. You mentioned curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
How can we stay curious? Sometimes we just like lose energy or we have a lot of things happening in life and we cannot maybe give the 100% on the sketching paper and exploring. How can we stay curious?
Yeah, well, that is I think a very good question, because that's, of course, you you should be doing this work because you're really interested and curious about what you can do, what you can create. If that disappears, and we also see it, of course, we see it with the students every now and then. We see it with people working in our office or other offices, that you fall back into some kind of standard way of working, because that's also the easiest. I mean, you know what to do, and maybe exactly as you say, you have, of course, private things happening at the same time. You don't have the energy, but you have to see that, you know, creating something new, finding something unexpected, that will actually give you the energy. That will give you energy.
Yeah.
If you just do the things that you're expected to do and you kind of follow that standard way of working, then you will actually in the end lose the energy and the interest. So that's also what we see, of course, in people working in projects or in offices, that after a while you don't push yourself anymore. So what you need to do is to find ways through sketching or through talking to people in the project team, or just also reading and seeing other references, going abroad and really visiting these fantastic areas where new things are happening, that will keep you curious. And I think what we often do in the office is that we try to do, at least, is that we also have sketching sessions with a group where you have 10 minutes to, we have a project, start with the project, you have 10 minutes to come up with the first idea. You get all the information, but okay, sketch and let us know what you think. And then you kickstart that process of really thinking fast, but also thinking differently. You don't have to, come up with fantastic new ideas, but you have to kickstart something.
Yeah,
and that will help us also in the project to get all these different views and discuss them, because you also need to explain them. What am I doing?
Exactly.
What am I drawing?
Exactly, to develop the idea.
Yeah.
So if I understand you correctly, it's about training our curiosity. Like, if we just sit on the desktop, we will not stay curious. We need like site visit, reading, exploring on the internet, maybe sketch different.
Yeah, and also talk to each other a lot. Show what you're doing. Ask people. Go around in the office. That's why I think it's very good that after COVID, we all are back again in the office. Huh? Of course, we found ways to talk with each other through Miro, through Google Meet. We have so we had a lot of sketch meetings as well, but really meeting and having this kind of spontaneous talks, that's so important for for the creative part of the project. What we also do is that we have to kickstart or to progress that creative process, is that we every Friday everyone makes a snap shot of what they're working on. So it can be a CAD drawing, can be a meeting in school, can be whatever.
Yeah.
So no big presentations, but this is what I want you to see.
Yeah.
And so it can be a sketch, for example, of something that you do. So that's a lot of creativity that you then see, just before you have your taco night or you go into the bar, you see all these fantastic new images from people that you work with.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have a Friday PDF update of all the projects that we're working on. And that's maybe 10, 15 pages where you...
Okay.
So you see this.
Yeah, what is happening, and you sync with the others.
And then you also know, okay, when I work with this project and I see this, then there's also a creative way to deal with, this kind of issue that we have to deal with. Or they are going into that direction. Or what a fantastic new... element they're designing on that square. It's a very nice way to feed each other.
Exactly. But it's also like giving back to the team.
Yeah.
It's like one team. You understand what is happening there.
That's exactly
what kind of skills you can find in your team, and like what can you collect to your project or maybe inspire.
Yeah. It's exactly the inspiring, but also creating the kind of Mandarworks family feeling. So what are we creating together? What kind of projects do we want to build on?
Your Mandarworks in Stockholm is very diverse. and a lot of international people, not only from Sweden.
No.
And I think it's like one of the unique studios with this kind of team.
Yeah.
How do you keep the different nationalities, backgrounds together as a team? They are different cultures. They study in different universities. How do you lead them as a team? What is like the key to keep them together?
I never thought of that really, but I think because they're all from different backgrounds, it's so easy to keep them together. So they all have kind of the same situation. Of course, coming from abroad, trying to set up a life in Sweden, and that makes them kind of bind together much more. And of course, we also have Swedish people, but even the Swedish people almost all have some kind of international background, so either mother or father, or and of course we work in a lot of different countries. We now have, I think, in 10 different countries we have ongoing projects. So it is, of course, also by working in these different projects, people also feel connected in some way. I felt myself when I was studying, I did an Erasmus in Graz in Austria. And there I really felt connected to all these people coming Erasmus from people. Abroad. So it's a bit that feeling that you have kind of the same drive and the same background and the same the same way you're trying to set up your life in Stockholm.
It's beautiful.
But it's very nice, of course, to have this diversity in the office. And and also because we work in a lot of international projects, it is also possible not everyone has to speak Swedish. But I must say also, almost everyone is trying to learn Swedish at the same time. So people are, like you, yourself, people are evolving very fast.
And before we continue, I have a question about good and bad idea. When you work in a team and many people sketch and coming with ideas, how do you take the good idea without offending the other people and saying, okay, no, this is not good idea? If you understand my question.
Yeah.
Because sometimes my people might say, okay, no, this is a bad idea, like directly, instead of, I don't know, bringing it, tweaking it. How do
exactly.
we do it?
You, I think you should never be allowed to say this is a bad idea, because you have to explain why. Of course, you can say that something doesn't work, but then, and that's the whole point about discussing, sketching together and explaining it. So why is this not working? What do you think is not working? And then you build further on that part, which is not working, but other parts might be fantastic. So you always have to, what I've learned a lot, and I started working in an office in Holland called Hosper, where my mentor was Alle Hosper, coming from the office B+B, which was a very big landscape office in Holland. And he really started this kind of sketch meeting sessions where everybody just had to, like I said before, you have to start sketching and explain really what is it that you are telling you, what is it that you do, and everybody was heard, everybody could explain what they were thinking. But you, of course, you had to really learn how to explain it, to talk about it, how to argue for your case. And of course, if you don't do that, and you just make a beautiful drawing and you say, well, this is it, then nobody's gonna take it in, nobody's gonna understand what the good parts are of the proposal. So that's, of course, you know, when somebody says it's a bad proposal, and you cannot argue why this is actually very good, then it's not coming further. But at the same time, what I also learned in that process while sketching a lot and talking about it is also that you see it as, okay, this paper that I'm putting here with my sketches, that's not me, so that's not personal, but this is the project that we're together forming. And it's also, in the process with a client, of course, that client is paying and that's pushing us, but we're together doing this is the project. so when you don't make it too personal, when you really make it into, okay, this this needs to be extremely good, we need to create something fantastic here, then it's easier to actually let go and not talk about you're doing bad or what is he or she doing. These are different elements that we need to work on. This is working very well. Could we combine it with this? You're talking about that part. That's very interesting. Could we twist it so that we, you know, that we create this this new corner there, for example? Yeah.
But it's also like about culture in a studio, right?
I think it's a lot to
build this so everyone accept that.
Exactly that. So that culture you really need to build on. So you need to build on this openness, this easiness of really, you know, opening up yourself and being vulnerable and being able to show what you're doing. So not staying in your own corner with your own, you know, screen and drawing something, and then in the end of the day, you send it to your boss and then you go home and hope that it's
good.
So that we don't want, of course.
No.
We want people to just send me that snap, you know, during the day, and I can react on it. We come to my table and discuss it, and then we take it further. So we have our meeting rooms, of course, in the office. We go upstairs very often, and then we beam it on the screen. We have this sketchy screen, and then, you know, we take it further very quickly.
Yeah, I learned this 6 years ago when you were my supervisor.
Yeah, exactly.
When I did my master thesis. Actually, I'm so grateful. I want also to thank you, like, because today, after 5 years, when I look back, I say, okay, thanks God that I had Patrick, because I learned the basic then instead of struggling.
That's fantastic.
During work. Yeah. And I remember when I did, like, was nice plans and so on. But then I put it in front of you and you told me, so what is this about? Like, you asked me to explain why, and not only like a beautiful drawing, but what is the purpose? To be honest, I didn't have so many answers, because I went to like just beautiful images, and that's how I learned, okay, we need every line full of purpose in reality, and it's not only about colors and so on. And I was so much in love with my proposal, which like in the beginning didn't make any sense to people, like I'm gonna live there, but you told me that this, like, don't fall in love with your proposal. It's more about like the impact you do. And then I learned how to, okay, it's not personal about me. It's more about like what impact we're gonna do for the people living there.
Yeah.
And I start to work a project, and I see people a lot love the proposal, and it's like, this is the only solution that's gonna save this area. So how can we be more, like, as you mentioned, more open, more free, and it's not personal. Like, maybe this proposal is not like the final proposal.
No.
How can we be flexible?
Yeah. No, but what we always, but also at KTH we did it, of course, but what we always want to press in the projects is that it's of course, it's never a linear process. It's extremely iterative you know, you think you found the DNA of a project and you think you really developed it well, and then all of a sudden the client comes and says, well, of course, this is, or we cannot pay for it, or, well, there's a lot of noise here. How can you cannot live there, of course. Mm. We discovered that this is a biodiversity corridor. So there's so many different things that will happen in the project that, you know, you're being pushed back again, or you're being pushed back into that cycle again. So you have to rethink maybe the DNA, or you have to rethink certain layers or areas, or you have to, but that will actually also that will enrichen the project at the same time, because it will give it a different push in a direction that you maybe never expected. And if you follow that direction, if you also see what we always try to do is to kind of see an extra value of that change that might happen. So can we somehow give something extra by something unexpected that's happening? Then I think you can see the value of things changing and evolving. But also just knowing that it is always, this is never the final answer. Yeah. So it's always going to change. Of course, in urban design projects, it's also processes that can go on for 10 or 20 years until it's built, or even longer. So that we know that we have to set, of course, this strong narrative and framework, but within that there's so much is going to change at the same time. You have to also let that happen.
Accept that this is going to be changed.
Yeah. But of course you need this at the same time, you need to set this strong framework. Yeah. And even the framework can change, but there is kind of a robustness that we need to show in our plans at the same time.
But
you know, kill your darlings, of course you have to be able to do that at certain points. But at the same time, you know, never let go this big idea of the vision. That's of course the danger when you say, okay,
You just like give up and just follow, as you mentioned at the beginning of the line, you know.
You have to keep on fighting, of course, that's for sure. Also have a client. What is very important is that to make a good project, you really need a good client, so who answers the right questions, of course.
What is a good client? With big budget?
No, it doesn't have to be the big budget, but it's the client that also fights for, of course, the quality of the project, where it's not just about, you know, we have to make this program, but who's also willing to keep on fighting for it. And of course, with the client, you might have differences in, you know, how to deal with certain issues or solutions, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's
again
your project together. So it's not that we're fighting against the client, but what we always want to do is somehow we have a question of a client, and that's probably a good question. It's a programmatic question, but we always want to give something more. So can we give something more behind that question? Can we give them something they never expected?
Is it like a Manda work philosophy? Like you want to the extra mile?
Yeah. What is it's the extra mile, but also the unexpected. So they maybe expected.
Yeah.
Okay, we get this housing area, but they get this fantastic new living area with you know, this totally new imaginary park or boardwalk or water arena that they never imagined.
So interesting.
And give them this extra present.
And how do you follow the DNA of a project? Like in the beginning, when you create the concept, you have something.
Yeah.
But you know more than me, like through the process, a lot of things change.
Yeah.
And sometimes in the end, you see like it's very few of the DNA left.
Yeah.
And it's not the same.
Proposal. But that's also okay. That's again that iterative process, I would say. But you have to go back then, of course, and see, well, is it then something that we've lost that we need to get back again? Or is it a different story that we're telling, and do we need to tell that story better?
Yeah.
So the DNA of a project, of course, can change over time because you can have also new findings. You have maybe new program, you have maybe new processes that started up, and that's fine. It's just, it needs to be something, it still needs to be unique and also, of course, connected to the context. We're not a very efficient office, I would say, because there's a lot of offices doing the same, but of course every project we see as something unique. So we have a way of working maybe, but we're trying to invent the wheel
in every
project, you could say, which is sometimes also losing time, and we can go faster to a solution, but it's also a way to find this uniqueness, this DNA from the start, lifting up certain layers or elements that are so interesting that that they all of a sudden create a whole new direction of the project. And then in the end, if that direction is going a bit sideways, that's okay, but as long as you can really have that strong keep that strong uniqueness of the project
then. You mentioned like about being effective and so on. A lot of working hours goes to the research or to the sketching concept. Where exactly you spend time?
Well, we actually spend less time, I would say, now in inventory and analysis, because we, and that's also what we told in the textures in the KTH master studio quite a lot is that already in the analysis, in the inventory, that's where you start the design, that's where you start the concept. So when you start to look at the, let's say, the ground layers or the landscape layers, there's already, you could already think about a direction of lifting those certain elements or going into a direction so that you steer your analysis and inventory already into design and into concept.
Yeah.
So then you can make those steps also much faster and deliver to the client also quite a lot quicker a certain scenario or design or direction.
So like how to say it, processes can be parallel, like overlap, not you don't need like to do analysis first and close this
for sure,
and then next start to sketch, like you can already start overlap.
And that's why we start brainstorming sketching sessions already in the beginning of a project without knowing too much, because that there's so much valuable, so many valuable thoughts already in that in the minds of the people. They have of course a lot of knowledge already and can actually intuitively already set kind of a direction of a project. And then it's easier to know, okay, then I have to do this inventory and I have to know what traffic system we have there, or what is the sound condition in this area, where are the biodiversity corridors, etc. So it's easier.
When you work in different projects, like internationally, is it difficult? Because like every project you need to, how to say, understand the site and change, like how to say, the mindset, because every project is unique. Is it difficult to adjust to different countries, cities, sites?
Well, I would say sometimes it's even more easy to make those quick steps, because you don't have, you're not super connected to the site, so you can actually oversee, or you can forget about certain elements and things, so you can make these big steps, which are good for, you know, some types of projects. If it's, you know, like a competition, for example, it's better to make, or it's better to make the strong concept and really show that strong narrative to, you know, the future client, because it's easier for them to see than the narrative of the project. Instead of that, you go into very specific issues in a project, you try to solve them very detailed, they're never going to see that. They're unable to see that. They have to see the big picture first. Then, of course, you need to deal with all those different issues. And that's, of course, you know, when we work a lot in Stockholm as well, where you go into deep into this project, you have to do that, of course. But to actually get that project abroad,
start big,
you have to, you have to make really show that big picture. But you know, we're working in London as well, which is an extremely difficult project, more in the sense of process, because it's a very specific planning process that we never worked in. You have different stages, you have different planning procedures, you have, you know, you have to go through those different stages, and we didn't even know what those stages were.
How do you learn this?
Well, you ask and read, then you do it, and you make mistakes, and we just step into these processes knowing that they might get complex, that we'll make mistakes, and we have to get the right people on it. But of course, it's challenging for us as well. But it's also knowing that, you know, when you can deal with these processes and you actually go into them and you can be part of them and create something, that's a fantastic feeling. Also knowing then when you step into these processes, you think that everybody knows what they're doing, but you know, even when you're asked the offices in London, well, what does it mean making a stage one report? And everybody says, well, we don't really know either, but it could be this or this. So it's the same as here, of course. Nobody really knows everything, and for sure. So you can also be the odd bird coming from the outside and actually testing things and pushing things at the same time.
I think there is also a big value being the outsider,
exactly.
like giving them inspiration or maybe like changing their way of thinking.
Yeah.
But of course, we also learn a lot from what we get into.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's yeah. And of course, you know, we work now in Bratislava in a project for a developer, which is redevelopment of an industrial area, and they you know, they keep a lot of these fantastic buildings. They really push a lot. The developer pushes the quality immensely, I must say. Work with Gill, and now the newer office, Softer, coming from Gill.
Mm-hmm.
So they and they push this human scale, of course, aspect of the project a lot, and are actually okay with building type of buildings that they never built before. So
okay,
I mean that is difficult to do. For example, is in Sweden every now and then. So we learn a lot from, you know, these developers that also that know that if we push this quality, if we create this kind of project, then we have something so totally unique that we will be able to sell it, but we also create this fantastic new environment.
Yeah. And Patrick, as like working internationally, you bring your ideas, it might be influenced from Sweden, from Scandinavia or other countries, but at the same time, how do you keep the respect to the site? Like, instead of forcing or bringing like something, a huge change that match with the culture, with the environment, and so how do you change or contribute to a change, but at the same time keeping the respect to the site, to the people, to the culture?
Yeah, but that has to do, of course, again, with this with trying to find the DNA of the project and really connecting it to the specific contextual layers that you have there. You have, and we work now again, I come from Holland, the Netherlands, but we work now again in the Netherlands, where you have this very specific polder structure. So it's very rational landscape structure. And we actually started doing something which was almost the opposite of that structure. We created kind of a housing environment which was much more kind of organic shaped landscape, which maybe could work. But then we started to look into, and we had to present for the provincial landscape committee, and we started to look into the provincial landscape systems, and then we came back again to a bit more the rational system, but then with some kind of organic shapes as well. So kind of combination.
Yeah.
So when you dig into those systems again and you see the quality of it and the benefits, and you connect it to something new at the same time, then I think that connection is the respect that you need to find for the existing conditions, landscape, culture, but at the same time, of course, we're creating something new. We don't have to copy things there and there. That's not what we're doing. We don't wanna create something which is we don't create something which is already there. It's always a new layer that we're adding.
So, like, giving the unexpected.
Yeah, and sometimes that is contrast, that could be, but then you also have to show how that is a quality within that given landscape, of course, or within that given system.
Yeah,
but it's the fun part, I think, to find that uniqueness and to still give them, you know, this, because they might expect, okay, this is kind of the way we are working, the way we do
like
it
the business
here
as usual.
In Holland or in Bratislava or in Iceland. But we, of course, want to give them the Mandarin presence. So what is the...
Yeah.
What is that?
And when you tell them about the qualities, and of course, you like use sustainability, livable place or city, and the words that unfortunately now and many times, they are only words and not really connected to the site.
Yeah.
How do you still use these words at the same time, connect them to the site, and there is an actual things happening behind this big, huge word?
Yeah. No, that's also a very good point. So the narrative should never land into these general aspects of sustainability and livability and creating something that's flexible, because you need that narrative needs to be very specific then. So sustainability is, of course, very many aspects, like ecosystem services and what type, what is that landscape, how do we take care of stormwater, how can it create some fantastic new street environment, for example. We did, in Iceland, we did a nice project of, it was kind of a quality program of different streets in a new housing environment that was already planned, that we were asked to do kind of a quality book for those streets, which also became part of the Norway Biennale later. And what we did was we started to show how these streets could be performative, sustainable, livable, but then really explaining what is that. So it became a street there where of course cars were pushed back partly, but that also became a specific play street, or it became this specific performative street which takes care of the stormwater but also creates biodiversity. And not just in words, but also showing then how this, you know, what are the sizes, what are the measurements, how are the cables going, how is it actually working. So being very specific then in what this livability, sustainability is, etc. And the same we did in Bratislava, and then really, okay, what is this human scale? So we looked at the different speeds you're going into this area together with softer. And these different speeds then relate to the different ways of, we also made a quality book of the housing. So how the houses and the roofs actually, they go down in scale. They they meet the people. So when you go in 3 kilometers per hour, then you see, you have another feeling of the human scale of the buildings. And we created the what we call the green street, which was not just green to be green, but also taking care of the stormwater, certain biodiversity, what type of plants, we showed in images how it works. So that's, you know, you have to be extremely specific and in your of course storytelling and in your narrative.
So there should be like a mechanism or a system or a value behind each these of, like, okay, I will not call them buzzword, but big words.
And I don't know if you remember the at KTH, the masters, where we said, well, nobody's allowed to use the words mixed. So if you do that, then I remember. We get the, So what is it exactly doing? And that's what we're also really trying to do in the projects. Okay, then you look really at program. How can they be mixed? What is then the synergy of this mix? That is starting to appear, actually. That makes it extremely interesting, where you really go into these different systems and show what they can do and mean.
I'm working a lot with the, like, the social sustainability aspect, including people and the design phase and so on. And also I see a lot like the co-creation. But then when you dig deep, it's not really like the co-creations, like, come on, let's be more like deeper and more solid and more concrete, explaining exactly what are we doing when we say co-creation. So it's also like, I think it's our responsibility as urban designers to show what do we mean. Otherwise it's going to be just like this visionary and not really realistic.
And when you really show what it means, then it's also, then you'll all of a sudden see that it's buildable and that this, you can actually create this, of course.
How long have you been working in this field?
I started working in 95 already, so what is that then?
20 or almost 30.
What
a lot of things happened in relation to storytelling. What do you think that urban designers should stop doing?
Well, it's very much about this general, what we just talked about. So don't hide behind these general words or general ideas of urban design when it's, you know, when you talk about sustainability or livability. You have to dig into the specificness of it. And also when you talk about storytelling, so make it specific. And actually, of course, we need our words, we need to explain the story, but make it visual. So show what you're doing. Don't hide behind these general words. I think that's a very, also when you, in the process of designing, when you have these sketch sessions and you try to explain the story and the project through sketching, through you know, visualizing it, that will, I think, help you a lot to actually understand your own and develop your own project. So that, and the sketching doesn't have to be on paper, of course, it can also be in a computer, or we use a lot of Miro. And so that's a fantastic way to sketch together and to at the same time to, you know, already have it on a presentation.
Like documented.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you see there is a skills that we should really develop now, like in order to continue with this profession? And
yeah, well, it for me, it would be that what we try to do with everyone in the office is that visual aspect of the urban design. So really visualize in concept, in analysis, in design itself, and in the end, of course, visualizing the final products of the project, but through the whole process, because that's how we also convince our clients. We convince the people working there. If you think about co-creation, we do quite a lot of these processes also with people living there, or like in Holland, we with the sports clubs, we have these big meetings, and we need to explain them very clearly. Okay, this is your program. This is the way we organize it. This is the way you get this fantastic new landscape. But of course, we need to be able to tell that story. And if you don't tell it clearly, if you don't show them what the quality can be, and that, and sometimes it can be 3D, 2D, you have to do it in an extremely clear way. Then you can convince people, and they can also tell that story further. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If they cannot explain it, well, then it's going to fall flat,
it's dead.
Of course.
Yeah. And before we go to the next section of this episode, if I ask you, it's going to be more like a summary of what we talked about. Three key elements that we can use in our storytelling so we can convince the client about the idea. What are like the main, absolutely three important keys?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it in the beginning there, but it's really about you know, finding the creativity. So this kind of new element, the creative part of the project. What is this present that you're giving? That is, I think, one of the, also to give yourself the joy of the project. It's also finding new ways in a project, lifting yourself, finding inspiration. So that is really, the creative part is so important to keep the project going, but also to keep yourself going, keep yourself challenged at all time. The other one is the experiment. So don't go for just the obvious. It can end up in the obvious one, but don't just go there. So go into different directions and explore them. And it doesn't have to take weeks. You can do that even in one day. Time is not the issue there. And the third one is, I would say, well, the narrative itself, but do it visually. Think visually when you explain that. So and then you back it up with words, of course. That also needs to be done. But the visual part and the structure, what does it actually physically mean in a plan? Work with that.
So curiosity or creativity and
experiment
and also like visualize
narrative.
The narrative.
Yeah.
The key elements.
Yeah, I would say so.
Great. Yeah. Well put together. let's go to the next part of the episode.
Yeah.
Would you like to take like a break, or should we continue?
I can continue. Sure, no problem.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because my question is also about continue. How do you keep yourself motivated to do what you do? How do you continue? How do you stay curious and enjoying
this? Yeah. Well, I think that's a very nice question, and also an important one, because that's again about challenging yourself at all times. And some people are better at doing that than others. I must say I have to push myself sometimes to challenge myself. I can also fall back into, okay, I do
like comfort zone.
Yeah, let's stay in the comfort zone. I do administration a bit, and then I go to projects, but I, you know, I keep myself a bit on the surface. Don't stick out too much. I have maybe my personality that's a bit part of that, but I also know if I don't push myself, then I actually lose the energy. So for example, when I still was a student. I went to these fantastic lectures, of course, of these famous good architects, and they they gave the lecture, and I then always ended up with questions in my head, but I never asked them. So then I said to myself, okay, I push myself every lecture.
Oh, yeah?
I have to ask at least one question.
Okay.
And that, of course, extremely nervous. There's 100 people there listening, and you know, this voice which is hesitating.
Yeah, stress.
But I pushed myself to do that. And that made me, you know, be much more aware of the lecture and really think about what are they saying? Is it, what is it giving me? And I was really thinking about, well, what am I not really, what don't I understand? Or what do I really want to know about?
Yeah, you listen carefully.
Yeah, and I pushed myself into doing something which I really didn't want to do, but I thought it would be good for me to push myself and be also out there in the public and show my interest also for this person that is giving the lecture. I mean, it's not nice to give a lecture when there's no questions in the end, even though you understand that people are nervous and don't want to do it. So that attitude I also have in project when I, you know, when I maybe need to push something and I don't want to do it yet, then I just push myself forward. And I also, my former boss at hospital, who we talked about before, he pushed me to also do presentations at certain times when I thought I couldn't do it and I didn't have enough experience.
Okay.
Even on the way to the presentation, he might say, well, Patrick, now you are going to present for a competition.
Yeah.
And of course, at the time, then you say, well, this is, how am I going to do it?
Right.
But then when you've done it, it's so fantastic.
You learn.
So that's also what we try to do with people in the office. Let them get out of their comfort zone. Also give them the trust that they can do the presentation.
Yeah.
And myself then step back, of course. That's and that's also giving me energy. And that's also, of course, the evolvement of the office is where we need to give more people responsibility and experience so that they can actually make those big steps and keep
and trust them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then also give them the tools, of course, to do that. So
just not just pushing them.
not pushing them from a cliff. No.
What is the thing that you're very proud of in your career? Or maybe not in your career, like project, or I don't know, maybe an advice you gave this person, something you're really proud of.
Well, I'm very proud of the crew we set up and the office we set up with Manworks. Mm-hmm. That's also one of those pushes I did very consciously. I had my own office, Holsperden. I was a partner in that office and started a side office daughter office in Stockholm. Then I met Martin Arfalk, who already had Manderworks, which was a smaller office. And he had been working in Holland, so we started to get to know each other in Sweden first. And we started to do projects together. And that, when we did that, I understood that, well, this collaboration that would lead to something very special. So I have to push everything to make it happen that we have an office together. And he had the same idea,
of course,
luckily. So I detached my Swedish part from the Dutch one at Hospital and put it together with Manworks. And that was it was a hard push because it also meant that, of course, I had to detach from the office. You have to negotiate, you have to make very big steps and leave other stuff behind, like big projects that we did, the fantastic reference projects of the hospital office, but knowing that this would lead to something else which actually pushes me into a direction which I wouldn't have imagined myself and couldn't do myself. And I made some of those steps, also meeting my wife, for example.
Yeah.
Very, very, I pushed myself. This is the person I want to live with.
Yeah.
And this is the office that I want to, develop. Mm. And Martin, he's the visionary creative part of it, I'm a bit more grounded, but that together works very well. That's I'm very proud of the, you know, the Manorworks family that we build up, and it's fantastic that we work in all these different countries and have all these different cultures meeting each other.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah,
like the team.
Yeah, I really love it.
And Patrick, take us back in time. Tell us like where you grew up, your childhood. Tell us more about Patrick.
Ah, that's nice. No, I grew up in the Netherlands, in the south of the Netherlands, in a small village called Best. It's near Eindhoven, where Philips became big. Philips built, you could say Eindhoven, but also these small villages around. So a lot of these villages were then created by Philips for their workers. But my father, he is still a construction engineer. So we were already a bit in the field, even though it wasn't for me. I never thought I would be an architect or
what was your dream?
My dream was to be a professional football player. I was quite good at playing football, but at the same time, when it really became competitive and you had to perform, kind of the joy was disappearing of the football.
Who was the top players? Like, is it like which generations? What? And
when I grew up, or
The national team, who was the
leader? Yeah, well, it was when you could say when Van Basten, Rijkaard, and Gullit, so they won the European Championship in 1988.
Okay,
so that was kind of the big time there. Yeah, so it was a nice time to play football. At the same time, you learned a lot from watching TV as well, but. Yeah. But that was more, of course, when I was younger, I wanted to, a lot of smaller boys and girls, not girls at that time, unfortunately, but wanted to become professional football players.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have an idea of what other career could be. So mainly when I started to look for universities, I kind of tripped on, I wanted to do kind of
sport,
economy, company.
Okay.
Economy, you could say. So I went to see that in the University in Eindhoven, but I also went to see what was called bouwkunde, so kind of building science, and that was architecture and design. It was all combined. Yeah.
Were you shy as a teenager or as a kid?
I was very shy. Yes. Yes. When I even talked or looked at girls, for example, it was getting a red face. I was very I was hard to only with my friends. I wasn't shy at all, but that's and I didn't want to talk in public or talk to the teacher or talk to adults. So that was I was very shy at that time. That's also why I pushed myself later to I have to push myself to get more into the open, to talk more, to give lectures, to ask questions,
So what happened when you start look for universities?
No, and then I just tripped on this bouwkunde, so this building science masters or bachelor and masters, and that was a combination really of you could say the analytical mathematical part plus creativity. So this combination with Delft was a bit more creative.
Yeah.
But Eindhoven was the part where you had to do a lot of physics.
Also,
And mathematics, other types of science, plus studios, creative part. It was that combination I thought would really work for me. And it did also work very well. It was a lot of work. It was really, from 9 to 6 in the evenings and weekends. But still, you found a lot of time to.
But then you pushed yourself to the Erasmus.
And then I pushed
I think
myself.
Things start to change.
That was a very good period in my development as a student and what I really liked and what I could push. So I went to Graz there, did a lot of nice projects, met a lot of nice people.
A lot of parties.
A lot of parties. But that was also already in Eindhoven as well. A lot of parties. Very good time. And then I also, after that, I did two internships at two offices in Holland. So also there, which I didn't really have to do for the studies, but there also I felt, well, I need to push myself to actually come into the practice.
To the market,
Yeah, and these two offices were, the nice part were, was that they were also my professors for my master's thesis. So I already knew them, good relationship.
Very good.
So that was, it was a good good start. Yeah.
And then when you start to work?
Yeah, and well, that was also a good, I think, a nice start, which I kind of, my sister, I have two sisters, one living in The Hague, one in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And the one in Amsterdam is, she is also a landscape architect. So she's kind of in the same business.
Cool.
And I was going to start to work, and I got a, I did some job interviews, and I got a job, a possibility from one big urban design office, but it was kind of a bit more boring one, but they were giving me a steady contract, so it was all fixed, okay salary.
Cool.
But there was also this Hospernen office that I also applied for, which was an extremely interesting and experimental office, you know, really going into directions that I would also like to work with, but they were not giving me a steady contract. Maybe half a year, was a bit unsure. And then I thought, well, of course I have to go for this steady contract.
The safe side.
The safe side. I know where I will be then. But then my sister said, no, no, you cannot do that. This is just the start of your career. You have to go for the challenge and the experiment, and you have to test it. And I said, well, okay, let's do that.
Thanks, sister.
Thanks. Yeah, that was such a good step. Yeah. It was such a, otherwise it would not have developed in that way, I think. And maybe not even started Manworks.
Why you moved to Sweden?
Well, I met a Swedish girl in in Holland.
Now we know.
Now we know. That's the way it goes. Okay. Yeah. In 95 there somewhere. So then I moved to Sweden in 97 with her. And we stayed there for 4 years. And then back to Amsterdam together, where I also got my son. So with my now former girlfriend. Yeah. Who was born in Amsterdam. So maybe I brought him also to
the graduation to the courses. Studio.
Yeah, I did every now and then at least.
I want to ask you, Patrick, because we sometimes, or a lot of times, plan life. We say, I want to finish my master in this year.
Mm.
I want to work in this specific company, in this specific position. I want to be manager in this year, like everything you plan and so on. So then when life
happens,
we get very sad and we feel like we are so big losers because we didn't accomplish what we planned.
Mm.
How should we think? What is your reflection about this?
Yeah, I've never been planning my life so much in that sense, I must say. So I can understand that feeling, but it's also about, for me, it's been about in key moments, then really push yourself to make that decision, to make that step, to go for it. And that there are certain moments, maybe it's not in everyone's life, but there are certain moments that you feel that, okay, now I have to do this. So then you have to put all your energy into to achieving that. But as I said, I also with the office, I don't really plan that we have to be in 10 years, we have to be 50 people, or or I have to, you know, worked in all the continents. Or I some other people in the office think so maybe, but I don't really do that. It's more about, again, trying to keep on challenging yourself, and with that, finding the energy or getting the energy to do that. So if you feel that that is not happening, then either you have to push yourself to get that energy, or you have to find a new way.
Yeah.
You have to find a new job, or you have to, you know, change that.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm not sure if that answers the question.
Just bring the microphone closer to you.
Yeah.
More, yes.
Yeah.
So it's for you, it's more like you follow the flow, but sometimes you need to make decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is the flow going to be next? Instead of putting times and dates and specific goals.
Yeah, I never had times and dates and specific goals. No. But maybe I should.
I don't know. I mean,
no, but it is then at certain times that you, okay, if you really make that then that decision and you go for it, then something fantastic is happening that I've experienced a few times. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. If you look back, is there something you not regret, but if you look back, maybe you will not do it again?
Yeah, that's hard to say.
Apart from the podcast now.
Yeah, exactly. I would do again. Yeah, for
thanks.
Sure. Yeah, it's. I haven't really thought about that question actually, but no, I wouldn't have done things differently. It's more if I wouldn't have pushed myself at certain points. That's I really learned that. I would really have regretted that. That's a bit like I started, or like I said before, with these pushing myself to make these questions. When I really didn't push myself and I didn't ask the questions, for days I would sit and think about, well, why didn't I do that? So that somehow, that's of course a very small thing, but when you start to think like that and you know that you can push yourself and things are going to happen, then also you get much better into making those big life decisions and making those steps. Somehow, I also make, of course, mistakes and don't do it in the right way. But maybe the things that you maybe regret, but I'm not sure if that's also the case. There's also, of course, projects and things that you work on that don't really give you the energy, but it's. I wouldn't even say that's something I would regret because it's also something that you learn something from it, and at the same time it's also and there's a contrast in projects. There's always different things happening there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What do you want people to hear or read about you, like 100 years from now, like in the future?
Yeah.
When we read Patrick, what will shows up? What will people read?
Yeah. Before I wanted people to know that I would be this fantastic football player then, but that's never going to happen. But I'm not really into that I should have some kind of fame or that people should know me for this fantastic, great designer. I would like to... In 100 years, that people would say that I'm a great father and friend and husband, but also, of course, that I'm part of. It's not me, and it's not Martin, the other partner, but that I'm part of the office man that works that has made this fantastic new environment, this fantastic park, or this fantastic housing area that people are living in and really enjoying their life, and an area that you really want to stay in. I live in this fantastic. Small row house area in Sikla, which is very simple, but it's so brilliantly done, and that's really where I want to live. I want to stay there. So if people know that I've created this living environment together with the office like that, and they remember me for it, that would be nice
for the good impact in their life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really enjoy, be happy in that place. Yeah.
But with all what you do, and you're very passionate about urban design and managing the office and so on, how do you keep the work-life balance? Do you have like a clear boundary between them, or?
It's not a super clear boundary, I would say, but I work less, I would say, than when I was younger. Of course, when you're younger, you don't have a family and you work.
Yeah, you just go for it.
Then we work nights a lot. And now also, of course, we do competitions, but I don't work. I can work at night, but not that much anymore. Mm-hmm. I set a boundary, you could say, that I don't work on Friday evenings and Saturdays and Sundays, but Sunday evening it starts again.
You need to plan the weekend.
Yeah. So the weekend is almost always free, unless, of course, there's a workshop that needs to be done or I need really to go and do a project because of a competition, but that doesn't happen that often anymore. Plus, I have three kids. One is 20, one is 12, and one almost 9. So I, when I get home, then, of course, we cook dinner and we eat dinner. And then when the kids go to bed, that's around maybe 9 or 10. Until that time, I don't work. I might read an email, but I don't almost never answer. But then after that, I
see. You start,
I'm more an evening and night person.
Batman?
Batman. I like really to work late. I'm not the very morning person.
Okay.
But it's fantastic because I don't work late and I answer mails. And then my partner Martin in the office, he starts at maybe, so I end at, I can be one sometimes too. And he starts at maybe 5, 6. And then there's this overlap, right?
He takes the lead.
So that works perfectly.
But do you, Patrick, do you have time for your hobbies? Or not?
It's I don't feel the pressure that much. I play football again.
Still?
I stopped for a while and played in the bandy, but now I play football again. In Sikla, where I live. So that's actually nice.
That's cool.
Sometimes on Wednesdays and Saturday morning at 7:30. So
it's not for you, no?
It's quite, no, exactly. I never thought I would do that. But it's actually very nice. Because that's something I enjoy, you know, while doing it. So intuitively, and it's so, you forget about that you're running and, you know, these guys it's running good. Behind the ball.
Yeah.
And
but it's good for your physical and mental health. Like,
yeah.
It's refreshing.
It is. Yeah. And it's, you know, if I would run, I'm only happy when I'm finished. But when I play football,
it's
I'm
like
every
yeah, yeah. 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 I think this is the beauty of football. Like, it's a lot of teamwork. You need to synchronize everything, move and think about the team. And
it's nice. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like it. Mm. Yeah. No, so that's giving me a lot of energy as well. But I feel that I have the balance. Sometimes it can disappear, of course. I also have my...
Yeah, it's life.
My dips, yeah.
Do you still teaching on KTH?
Yes, yeah. Mm. So textures, the master studio is starting again now. Mm-hmm. I was there yesterday. So it's
cool.
You see,
there is a change in like different generations, in different years, or no, or like almost.
Well, there's a change in different aspects of it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's, if you talk about sustainability and specific elements of it, like a few years back, it was a lot of the food in the city, of course. Mm-hmm. Now maybe the more ecosystem services and biodiversity is coming up. So there's always different parts of it. And so of course, we started the master studio or the whole master's course as a sustainable urban development. So it was in the beginning very general. And now you get much
niche,
many more tools on what is it exactly. Mm. So that's fantastic to
and
see.
Do you see the change in what students produce, like from different years, like let's say from my years compared to last year?
Yeah, it's getting, of course, a bit more visual. It's easier to
produce
work with 3D material.
Yeah.
That's easier. There's also a bit more design students coming in. So in the beginning, it was quite wide and broad. So also a lot of planning and geography, etc. Now it's a bit more design.
Yeah.
So that you see a change.
Yeah.
AI, I haven't seen coming in that much yet.
Okay.
But that will probably come quite soon.
Yeah.
It's also something that we in the office every now and then use for the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Not that much yet for producing images.
Yeah.
But
I think it's coming. It's just we're just starting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm. Yeah.
So I have two questions left before the final section. If you want to choose another profession, what will be this profession? Not related to what you do now at all, and not even football.
Then I don't have anything. No, but I as I said before, I started to look into this economics, but that if I would have chosen that that side of the road, then I don't think I would have found the energy.
So no.
It's actually, it would then be something which is very intuitive, like football playing. But no, I have no idea.
Really. Okay.
It's I've never thought about
changing,
doing something else. And no.
Okay. I give you another. Now this question is harder. If you choose to be something else than being a human,
okay,
what will you choose to be and why?
Wow. If you could choose that, and if you can make that happen, it's a bit also about how I want people to see me in 100 years. Or what would be nice is if the people, or if I could be kind of this warm shower, you know, the warm shower.
Like,
I really enjoy a warm shower.
Okay.
And that's one of the maybe sustainability aspects that I'm not so good at. So I take quite long showers. My son has also learned from me to take very long showers. So it's taking a lot of energy, of course. It's not good. But this, you know, being in this comfort zone, enjoying this fantastic warm shower, that's also a bit what I want to be in the office, to give this, you know, feeling of home, of warmness, of
relaxing.
That's and it doesn't have that much to do with maybe the storytelling and the project itself, but yeah, I want people to feel to see me as a warm shower.
This is so fun. Nobody, like the previous 400 guests, nobody told me, like everyone told me, I want to be a tree, bird, to travel. This is,
you know, this warm shower.
This is very unique. No, it's interesting. I like it. And the final section, three questions. First one is that you give a message to yourself.
The message to myself is to keep on challenging myself, I would say. To keep pushing. Don't stay in that comfort zone all the time. And I get help also, of course. Martin, for example, in the office, he pushes me quite a lot. And I also learn how to go with that flow. So that's very good for me. I just noticed.
Yeah. And the three takeaway messages to our listeners.
Well, I would say it has very much to do with the core parts of this of the way we work in the storytelling is to stay curious, because if you don't do that, if you just fall into the system of your comfort zone and just knowing how to do things, you will just lose interest. So you have to keep on challenging yourself in that sense. And it's maybe not for all, but experimenting and trying to find new ways, that's such a fantastic tool to investigate, because it means that you go into different directions without knowing if they make sense or if it leads to something. But that's also what we said at KTH often, you know, see that border, but jump over the border just to see what's there. If you don't do it, then you will never experience it. But if you go there, then you might find new things. This last part, and then, you know, really try to don't hide behind the words, but try to really visualize that, try to show it in your structure lines or in your hand sketches or in your you know, your other graphic visual material. Show that life that's going to happen.
Tell it in a drawing.
Beautiful.
And the last question in this episode is going to be you asking it. I don't have more questions. It's your time. Ask a question to our listeners.
Ask a question to your listeners. Well, the question is, are you challenging yourself? Are you pushing yourself out of that comfort zone? Are you challenging yourself so that you stay interested, so that you stay creative, so that you stay experimental, so that you keep having the joy, which is also is such a big part of what we're doing, the joy of really doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Keep on pushing that.
Mm. Patrick, thank you so much again.
Thank you for
everything, and mostly for coaching me during the master studies. Big part of me now is because like the coaching I got, so I'm very grateful. And yeah, keep shining and keep up the good work.
Thank you too, Mustafa. Fantastic to see what you're doing. It's I'm following you as well, of course, and it's
thank you.
It's amazing the step you made.
Thank you.
Very
so much.
Nice to see.
Thanks.
You.